Welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa Caprio. Do you believe in magic? What if you were told that all you had to do was get a little creative and work a magic spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Here on Postcards to the Universe, we will share manifesting, tips, postcards, creativity, abundance, and prosperity. Here is your host, Melissa Caprio.
Hello, and welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. Today's Wednesday. It's my favorite day of the week. I always love doing my shows on Wednesday. I hope you guys are doing well and everybody's healthy and happy and abundant in their life. Today, I have a really cool guest, author Jo Graham, and we're going to be sharing from her latest book, Seven Goddesses of the Hellenistic World, Ancient Worship for Modern Times. And I've been reading the book. I just finished it actually this morning. It's really, really interesting. So stay tuned, and Jo's going to join me in just a couple of minutes. To my regulars, thank you again for being here with me each week. I love you. It means the world. And for those of you who are new tuning into my show for the first time, I want to give you a big warm welcome. Thank you. And I hope that you will be a returning listener. A little about me. I am also an author and a photographer and artist. And I have a book, and it's titled Postcards to the Universe, Harness the Universe's Power and Manifest Your Dreams. And in my book, I share 30 manifesting stories along with photographs that I took of the contributors manifesting postcards. And a manifesting postcard is kind of like a little mini vision board. And I include in the book a bunch of writing exercises, and it helps us get clear on what it is we want to manifest, and a toolbox full of fun exercises on how to manifest in the big areas of our life. You know, love, money, health, career, and so much more. So if you're interested in doing inner work, exercises, and reading people's incredible journeys of transformation, inspiration, and manifesting, please go to your favorite bookstore or online and purchase a copy. And I'm also asking for people to keep sending me manifesting postcards. I love when I get them. And if you want to know where, how to create one and where to send it, you can find all that information on my website, www.postcardstotheuniverse.com. I tell you how to create a manifesting postcard, and the address of where to send them is on there. And shoot me an email and let me know that you're sending one if you are, so I will look out for it. If you're on Facebook, I have a public group called Postcards of Love, and we share uplifting stuff, so please join me there. I just wanted to mention, before I forget, that we've changed the format of the show a little bit. So for those who listen all the time, we were taking two commercial breaks at the 20 and the 40-minute mark, but we've moved, and now we're just taking one commercial break at the 30-minute mark. So I just wanted to let you guys know. If you're like, why is it different? That's why I've changed it over, which I'm excited about. I like just having the one commercial instead of two. That way it doesn't stop the flow of the conversation. Each week, I share what I call a magical message, and I post them on all my social medias, and it's an image of a manifesting postcard that I photograph with an affirmation that I like to focus on for the week, because I use affirmations all the time, and I think that they're a very powerful way for it to become a new belief in our lives. And this week's photo, with its magical message, is I am debt free. So, you know, carrying a lot of debt can be very stressful. And after my divorce, I assumed all the financial debt along with all the other stuff that happened. I took on all the financial debt. So I was in a lot of debt, and it was very, very stressful. And I'm happy to say that this was many years ago, but over the years, I have become debt-free, and it's really nice. It's nice having to worry about and stress myself out about all of, you know, the bills and the money and credit and all that stuff. So a few benefits I just wanted to mention when you do become debt-free is you find that you have a lot more money to spend, save, and invest. I've noticed that for me personally, I sleep much better when I'm not worried about money, right? My credit score, which took a major hit after the divorce, is amazing now. I dream up new financial goals for myself all the time. I pick my own schedule of the way that I want to work. I have so many more options. And because of what I do, you know, my show and my book, I can finance my own dreams, which is a really, really nice thing. So I just wanted to share that with you guys this week. And for this week's magical message, in the context of today's show, the goddess Tai Chi, who we'll be talking about today, is perfect to help with living debt-free or manifesting financial abundance. So we're going to talk about that more in just a second. Next week, I have Dr. Vic Monzo on. He is an international business success coach. He's the founder of the Billionaire Success Formula and author of Decoding the Matrix, Powerful Tips for Unleashing Your Potential and Accelerating Your Spiritual Awakening. Now, to get to today's guest, Jo Graham has practiced in pagan and hermetic traditions for more than 30 years, including leading an eclectic circle for nearly a decade. She has studied the classical world extensively and today mainly works in the traditions based on the Hellenistic cult of Isis. Graham introduces readers in her book, Seven Goddesses of the Hellenistic World, Ancient Worship for Modern Times, to the history and mythology of seven Hellenistic goddesses and teaches us how to work with each one in our spiritual practice. With the help of these powerful deities, we can improve our luck, resilience, teamwork, transformation, and much more. Through stories, journal prompts, meditations, and rituals, Jo encourages you to explore your personal connection to each goddess. Draw on Athena's wisdom to bring clarity to your endeavors. Embody the power of a ruling queen with a right to honor a Targetess, and enjoy all shades of love under Aphrodite's guidance. With this book, you can apply the ancient but still relevant lessons of Tai Chi, Isis, Epona, Cybele, and others for more inspired devotional experience and an empowered life. To find out more about Jo, if you go to goodreads.com and you look up Jo, J-O, Graham, G-R-A-H-A-M, you will find all about her and all her other books. Welcome, Jo. Thanks so much for being here with me today.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
I'm trying very hard to pronounce the names correctly because I'm like, you know, it's not like Sarah or Jill, right? These are like ancient names. So I'm like, oh God, hopefully I'll get them right. But it was really interesting reading your book, and you're going to discuss the seven goddesses today. That's what we're going to be talking about of the Hellenistic world. And for those of us who aren't familiar, what is the Hellenistic world or period? Because some people have never heard of this at all.
Well, I think a lot of people are familiar with Greek mythology or Roman mythology. But the Hellenistic world is sort of bigger than that. It's this entire period in the ancient world from about 323 BCE, the death of Alexander the Great, through, you could say, probably the end of the Roman Empire. So about 600, 700, 800 years, depending on how you define it. And it's this period of enormous intellectual and spiritual expansion as peoples come in contact with one another. The thing that kicks this off is Alexander the Great's empire, because it brings into contact with each other peoples from all over, everywhere, but from Europe, from Africa, and from Asia that had not previously had a lot of contact. And this really created an enormous incubator for ideas and thoughts and philosophies and new cultural understanding, and for that matter, for, you know, daily life things. One of the stories that I tell in the book is about rice. You know, mm-hmm. we think of rice as sort of universal. Do you remember that story in the book?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
That Alexander the Great's army, he gave a dowry to 10,000 women to marry the soldiers that they were having relationships with. And imagine 10,000 weddings, 10,000 oh military wives. And that's just the ones he dowered. That's not, you know, every mm-hmm. military wife.
Sure.
But, yeah, these women are from all over who are marrying Greek and Macedonian men. They're from Persia. They're from Egypt. They're mm-hmm. from south of Egypt in the Sudan. They're from the Middle East. They're from up in what's now Ukraine and the Caucasus. They're from India. They're from Pakistan. These women are all military wives together. And, you know, what do all of these women do when they're thrown into this situation where they're sharing this incredibly intense experience of being married to soldiers together? They share things, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talk to each other. They share recipes. They share child care, they share teaching, they take care of each other when they're sick, they nurse wounded husbands, they take care of babies, and they share their food.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, previously, rice had not really been known in the Mediterranean, but these women from India and from Pakistan and so forth, rice is a staple of life.
It's a staple, yeah. Rice goes with everything, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't imagine Indian or Persian food without rice. And so these women share their recipes, and other women say, this is wonderful. We love this. And so these recipes get passed on, they get changed, they get adapted by the women who are, you know, now making them for their families. And every Mediterranean rice dish we think of, every stuffed grape leaf, every paella, mm-hmm. every, you know, everything comes from this.
Yeah, we take that for granted. We think, especially for whatever culture we are, that it was just, oh, we had that, not realizing that, you know, many hundreds of years ago, no, we didn't. It was brought over by certain situations, right? Yeah,
yeah.
You do mention that in the story. And in the book, I mean, in her book, she's got stories that go along with each goddess, and I'm going to ask you about that in a second. But before I do, what got you interested in this particular period and of these goddesses? Like, where did this come from you?
Well, I think the reason I decided to write this book was, over the years, I've heard a number of people say, well, I don't really feel a connection with the gods of my genetic ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, you know, well, you know, I'm of Northern European descent, but I've never been able to really get into the Scandinavian gods, or, you know, I'm of a particular other descent, and that just doesn't appeal to me. But feeling like going to a different pantheon would be mm-hmm. cultural appropriation, or would be inappropriate, or, mm-hmm. you know, is that okay? But at the same time, are we just destined by our genes to, oh, I have to be into a particular goddess because I have certain genes?
Right.
You know.
Yeah, no. mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah. You know, and so I thought, well, you know, the thing about the Hellenistic period is, just like these women shared recipes, they shared goddesses. And this mm-hmm. created these syncretic goddesses who crossed cultural boundaries
mm-hmm.
because, you know, how many people would want to worship a goddess where their friends weren't welcome?
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you want to go to a right where your husband wasn't wanted? Where he was,
no.
Oh, I'm sorry, you can't come in here. You're the wrong race.
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
and so these worships became syncretic because people wanted to share. And friends wanted to worship together. And as, you know, all these 10,000 women had children, their children grew up, their children married each other. And so in the next generation, you see someone who has a Greek name, mm-hmm. and he has one Greek grandfather, one Macedonian grandfather, one Indian grandmother, and one Ukrainian grandmother.
Interesting.
And
that's interesting.
Yeah.
So you just found that very inspiring?
Inspiring and very much addresses where we are today. You know, if you have mm-hmm. one Italian grandparent and one Swedish grandparent
mm-hmm.
and one grandparent that you're not sure about and one grandparent who is, I don't know, from Puerto Rico, and you're not sure exactly what their ethnic heritage is beyond Puerto Rican, what are you?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think a lot of Americans are in that position.
It's true. Yeah.
And,
that is interesting.
And
but I love so much in the story about that each goddess, you have a fable or a story that goes mm-hmm. along with the representation of that goddess. Now, those stories that you have in each section for each one, did you research those stories for your book, or are those actual stories that have been passed down?
There's a bunch of different things. All of them are stories that I have written fictionally as stories, but all of them are based on either traditional stories that are part of the mythology and worship, like the Isis story, for example,
mm-hmm.
or they're stories which we know from history, like the Athena story.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or they're stories that I have reworked that come from an ancient source, like the Atargatis story. Herodotus tells us a version of this story, and modern archaeology affirms some of the things that he says in the story. So all of them are very well researched, I think.
Okay. And so, yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, that's what it feels like when you read it. So let's talk a little bit about the goddesses. There is seven, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Am I getting that right? There are seven in the story. And so you introduce us to the goddess, like Tai Chi, the trickster.
Tai Chi.
You call her the trick. Taiki, see? I'm
Taiki.
Saying it wrong. You say it like a K, not like a ch, ch. It's spelled CH, so it throws you off. Thank you.
It does,
Taiki.
But it's said like a K. Yep.
Okay, thank you. Taiki, the trickster goddess, and she's also known to the Romans as Fortuna, the goddess of fortune, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fortune, and you say fortune is fickle. So there's a story in there, and then after the stories, and you do this with each goddess, there's a meditation, and then there is a worshiping rite or ritual that you can do I would say, connect with that specific goddess and ask for those things that you want. So I like the way you break it down. So you might not personally, it might not be every goddess in the book that you have a connection with, but there may be a few that you do that you could start
mm-hmm.
working with. Is that, I really like that.
Yeah.
So why don't we share a little bit about each goddess? So let's start with Taiki. You want to share a little bit about Taiki?
Sure. Taiki is one of the most accessible. She's also called Lady Luck. If
mm.
you've ever heard people say, Lady Luck,
yeah.
be good to me,
Yes, yes.
Yes. Lady Luck has stuck with us, and she is the goddess of good fortune. And so our story is about a young man who wins her favor through his personal qualities, which is taking a chance, but also his generosity. Because one of the things that Tyche likes is she likes people who are generous with the gifts that have been given to them. That abundance breeds more abundance.
Yes.
And that being selfish is a fast way to lose her favor. There is one point in the story that I tell where the young man has invested in a ship and its cargo, and the ship is lost. And instead of blaming the captain, oh, he must be a fool, what have happened, he takes the captain's daughters into his house and treats them as his own kin. And when the ship comes to port safe and with a cargo worth a fortune, the captain's daughters run to him with laughter. And he makes a fortune, and also he wins the heart of the captain's oldest daughter because he's a good man. And instead of being vengeful or taking advantage of the girls, he's good and kind. And so the good fortune that comes to him is deserved.
Is deserved, right. And that's the lesson from Tyche, and that's why the gentleman is in the story is blessed with financial abundance, and not just financial abundance. You see that the more he gives, it's like you say, the more you give, the more you get, right? That's a universal thing. So the more generous you are, the more kind you are, the more you put that out there, the more you're going to get. And it also works with the opposite. The more cruel you are, the more mean you are, the more selfish you are, the more you're going to get of that. So that's what working with Tyche about would be about, is being generous with yourself and whatever it is you have to give, and that will bring in more to you, which I really liked. So I totally resonated with Tyche, but in my mind I kept calling her Tyche. Tyche. So I had to get that right. And there's a meditation and a ritual that I could do, which I thought was really cool. So, okay, so that's what Tyche is showing us. So let's move on to, and many of us have heard Isis. Isis is very familiar because I had never heard Tyche before. I heard Fortuna, but not Tyche. I didn't know that. But Isis I have heard about. So let's talk a little bit about Isis.
Well, Isis is one of the great mother goddesses. She is, her epithet is the mother of the world. And one of the things that is really unique about Isis in the Hellenistic period is that Isis says, I'm everybody's mother. I'm not the mother of a particular group. I'm not the mother of a particular people. I am the mother of everyone. And that was really unique to her in her place and time.
Makes sense. So that would be, so then it makes complete sense to me why one of the biggest lessons from the mother of everyone would be about compassion. Having compassion for others and having mercy. And would Isis be the goddess we would go to if we're looking have forgiveness? If somebody has wronged us and we want to work on forgiveness, so Isis would be good to go to for that.
Yeah, because her story is, she is, in the Queen of the West story, she is a young queen, she is married to a man she loves, she's pregnant with her first child, and he is brutally murdered, and she has to flee for her life and live among strangers and raise her son among strangers until he can return as the lost prince and restore justice to the world. But this is terrible. I mean, she is a young, pregnant woman whose husband is murdered. And instead of becoming bitter and cruel and vengeful, she becomes resilient and compassionate. And that is so powerful, especially when you know, it's so easy to say, well, what one wants is revenge. What she should want is to get back at this, and or to turn away in bitterness or depression. And what she does instead is reach out to the people around her, and mm-hmm. she becomes a model of resilience and kindness rather than a vengeful and bitter person. And, you know, so often we face tragedies in our lives, and we have a choice about how we respond to that.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a little section on justice, and you say that obviously the murder cannot be erased, and instead of her becoming bitter and brutal, she raises her son to be compassionate and to come up. And when he's an adult, he can claim the throne and he can restore balance.
Yeah.
And that's her way of getting justice. So it teaches us, right? It teaches us to have mercy on our, I guess, enemies. I don't know. I can't think of a better word. It's not always easy, but if that's what you're working on, if you're working on forgiveness, if you're working on having compassion, then Isis, I think, would be a great goddess to connect with. Yeah. 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 It's just, yeah, because you have the story about the murder and what happened, and that's how we connect with her and her, what she's going through, walking in her shoes, right? Of mm-hmm. what Isis has had to go through. Yeah. And what I also really, really like too is you have the dates that correlate with each of the goddesses, and you have colors that we can incorporate also, mm-hmm. which I love, and incense and symbols and all the foods. It's really nice. But I'm going to pause here because I just looked. I have to get used to our new time for commercial break. So let's take our commercial now, and we'll be back in a few minutes, and we're going to continue talking about our goddesses. Stay tuned.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hi, I'm Melissa Caprio from Postcards to the Universe, creating the life you crave. Do you believe in magic? What if I told you all you had to do was get a little creative and work a dream spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Well, guess what? I've got the spell for you. Postcards to the Universe, a global movement for manifestation, is a casting magical tool for you to use whenever you want. How does living in passion sound to you? Join me in my movement where you get to create in the magical playground. Let's think outside the box and do some playful conjuring. By casting out our desires with a manifesting postcard, we explore our hearts and allow the alchemy of our dreams to appear. And don't forget to tune in each week here on OM Times Radio with my show, Postcards to the Universe, Creating the Life You Crave at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. I share tips on creativity, abundance, and prosperity, and you will be introduced to the coolest guests, trailblazers, mystics, and creatives who enrich our lives.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
The rainbow is God's promise of hope for you and me. And though the clouds hang heavy and the sun we cannot see, we know above the dark clouds that fill the stormy sky, hope's rainbow will come shining through when the clouds have drifted by. Teresa Caprio is the president and founder of Rainbow Guardian, Inc., a nonprofit 501c3 serving the intellectually challenged / developmentally disabled, including autism. Teresa started the foundation in 1995 so she could help make a better life for her intellectually challenged daughter. Her dream is that the Rainbow Guardian will provide the necessary tools and education to help the public understand the special needs population, because it's often discarded in mainstream society. To find out more or make a donation in support, please go to www.rainbowguardian.org. Rainbow Guardian's special mission is to see these unique people live a happy, full life and have a future of liberty and equality.
Hi, and welcome back. So if you were just listening to the commercial, no, you were not tripping out on drugs. There was some feedback going on. I'm like, oh my God, I'm hearing two voices at once. But that's okay. Like I said, we're on a new system, so we'll figure it out. But listen, it's more time for Joe and I to talk, so it's all good. If you're just joining me, I have author Joe Graham on, and we're talking about her book, Seven Goddesses of the Hellenistic World, Ancient Worship for Modern Times. And we're going through the goddesses. We've talked about Tyche and Isis, and now Joe, why don't we, the next one that you have in the book is Athena. Now, I've heard of Athena. I'm sure many people have heard of Athena. But why don't you talk a little bit about her?
Well, Athena is very well known. I think a lot of people know her from Greek mythology. And Athena, the context I talk about her in is strategy. And that can be not just military strategy, but strategic thinking and planning. I talk about three steps to strategic thinking. Mm-hmm. The first one is thinking things through and being cautious. So many times in life when we have a decision, someone will try to stampede us into a quick answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this deal is today only. Oh, there's another buyer who's very interested in this. And when someone starts stampeding you, what are they afraid that you're going to find out if you stop and think about this? You don't need to take this used car to your mechanic. It's certified.
Mm. Yeah, well, I always think of, like, it's funny that you said cars, and now that you're saying that, like, when you go to buy a car and you're at the car dealership, and like, oh, we're only having this special for today. It's like they get onto your emotional, like, oh, I got to do it right now, and it doesn't give you the time to think it through. So Athena would be somebody to help us with our critical thinking.
Yes.
Okay.
To think things through, and then also the second thing is to let go of your presuppositions. We tend to assume that other people have the same motives or the same priorities that we do. Like, if you assume when you're interviewing people for a job that your employee's desire is as high a salary as possible. Now, that may not be what your perfect candidate actually wants. Your candidate may say, you know, I'm willing to make less money to be able to have a flexible schedule.
Mm.
Or you may not know that the employee that you're talking to is thinking about starting a family, or that has a parent who has cancer, and that they are taking care of their parent and trying to get them to chemo and things. And their priority may be having an employer who understands that they need to take some time when they need to take some time, not an employer who's going to pay them in stock options.
And so
we need to let go of our presuppositions and look at each situation as the situation it is, not as what we think it should be.
Right. That makes sense, especially after reading the story. And you say in the book that Athena is, you call her the champion of democracy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that's who we would go to. We're trying to be democratic. And also, she's the goddess of strategy and planning, which makes sense. So if you're working on, say, something, let's say you're building on your career, right? And you have to come up and you're having a hard time with your strategy and your planning and you're moving forward and what steps you need to take. You would work with Athena for her guidance and help in helping you spark ideas, giving you insights, calling on her for guidance.
Yes, and helping you think of options that you may not have considered.
Right.
You know, a lot of times we think, oh, well, the job that I need to get next is X. But maybe it's not. Maybe there is something that is lateral to that that is also a stepping stone to where you want to go. And that lateral movement is forward movement. But you just haven't thought about that yet.
I would imagine that Athena was good for you when you were putting together this book.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Very much so.
Do you do the rituals? Do you, when there's something, whatever you're working on in your life, do you do all the rituals that you shared with us in the book?
I have done most of them. I have not done all of them. Because, like everyone else, I'm more drawn to some than others, and some are more appropriate to what's going on in my life. So I've done most of them, but not absolutely all of them.
Yeah, yeah. No, but there's so much rich information here. And you tell us, as a reader, to have a journal and write down some, you know, notes and insights we get. And you ask questions at the end of each story, things for us to think about and consider about the reaction we have to the story and why we have that reaction. So
I think that's actually one of the most important parts of this. More important than the ritual in some ways is to take apart, why do we have that response to the story? You know, what is that telling us about ourselves? Is it telling us that maybe this is something we hadn't thought about that we need to work on? Or maybe this is something that we've never looked at from quite this angle before.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. In my book, it's the same. I ask questions to help us get clear. Because many times I have found that people say, you know, they want something. And what they want is the emotion that they have attached to whatever that thing is, but they're not quite sure, you know, how to be clear about it. You know, they'll say, I just want to be happy. Well, what will make you happy? And they don't really know, right? They just want the feeling of joy, right? So we need sometimes to get clear on why we have these emotions and what they're connected to ask, to figure out for ourselves what it is. So by asking ourselves, answering the questions that you've posed in the book, like if you have an emotional reaction to the story in, let's use Athena's case, to ask yourself, well, why are you having an emotional reaction to that? Is it, are you resistant? Are you compassionate? Like, what is it about this, about that story that's resonating with you? And ask yourself those things so you get a little clearer on what it is, you know,
absolutely,
that you may need in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyone listening who is having a hard time planning something, you know, planning some movement forward in whatever area of your life, Athena might be a good goddess for you to connect with to help you in that area. Okay, so I'm going to try to say this first, the next one, and then you tell me if I say it right. Okay, is it Atar Gaddis?
Atar Gaddis.
Atar. Atar Gaddis. Okay.
Yeah, the mermaid queen.
The mermaid queen. Atar Gaddis. Okay. So let's talk. Now, I had never heard of her before your book.
Yeah, she's not very well known at all today.
But she was.
She was. She was. She was very well known in the Hellenistic period. And she is the mermaid queen of the Euphrates River. And if you've read some Greek mythology, you know that there are a lot of stories about the sons of Zeus or the sons of some other god who become mighty heroes. But her story is that she is the mother of Thamurmat, who is a ruling queen, and she is the mother of a daughter who is a hero. So it's a little kind of different twist that we're not familiar with now.
Hmm. Okay. So what is her strength? What is her message for us, or her lessons for us?
Her lessons for us is the ruling queen. You know, a lot of times women are told that they're good if they're powerless, or they're good if they're victims.
Mm.
That being a victim makes you a good person, but being a witch with a B makes you a bad person, and that having any power makes you a witch with a B. That you have to demonstrate how powerless and weak and how much of a victim you are in order to prove that you're a good person, which makes it very difficult when we do achieve positions of power. Suppose you're a woman and you are the boss. You are the business owner. You are the superintendent. You are the elected official. You're the man, only you're the woman.
You're the woman, right?
How do we rule? How do we have responsibility? And how do we wield power well? Because there's a point where you can't say, oh, I'm powerless. You're the superintendent of schools. You're not powerless. You're the person in charge. You've achieved your goals. You are now the CEO of your own company, and you have 300 employees. It's yours, Melissa.
No, that's why she's the ruling queen. So she would be very good to connect with if you need courage.
If you need courage, and also if you're trying to come to terms with, you know, how do you not be the scrappy outsider? You've done the thing. You broke that glass ceiling. Now what?
But so, I'm curious why she's the, is it because of the ruler of the great river that she's the mermaid? Where's the mermaid connection come in?
You know, that is an interesting part of the old story. And I am hypothesizing here, but I am hypothesizing that originally she was a spirit of place, that she was the spirit of the Euphrates, and that over the centuries, her stories and her worship expanded to the sphere of the ruling queen, but that she started off as a river spirit. That's my guess.
Okay, yeah, I was just curious about
that. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
And she's the hardest one to research. There's the least known about her.
Yeah. Well, I never even heard of her until, like I said, I read your book. So it was interesting to read about her. And I like that if you need some bravery and some courage, that she would be somebody to connect with to help give you the guidance in that area. Okay, so next you talk about Epona. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You just correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's right.
Okay, and let's talk a little bit about her because I have heard the name before, but I didn't know anything about her.
Well, she is mainly known as a Celtic goddess, and I think people don't really realize that the Celtic world was part of the Hellenistic world. And so, you know, these goddesses come from different peoples, but were widely shared. She is the goddess of horses, and she's the goddess of the herd. Her sphere is the community.
Yeah.
The community and teamwork, because nothing about caring for horses or the way that horses act is about one person alone. It's always about the community. It's always about the herd. It's always about working together.
Right.
And so I think that the way and, you know, thing to invoke her for that a lot of people would find useful is for something that really is going to require a lot of teamwork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just had a thought. If you're looking for attracting the right people to work with, say you're starting something and you want to attract the people that you need to be in your community, she would be a great goddess to invoke and talk with.
Oh, she would.
Get,
yeah,
to bring those people to you, the right people for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she is not about competition. You know, we're such a competitive society. Everything is like the best chicken recipe.
Right.
Well, you know, what's the best chicken recipe? You know, different people like different things. There isn't a best chicken recipe or the best book or the best piece of music or the greatest band.
Yeah.
You know, these are all things that are about personal taste. And Epona is, she's not about the competition. She's about everyone having a role that suits them and everyone working together.
Yeah, cooperation and community.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That makes sense, yeah. Okay, good to know. So if anybody's listening and they're looking to bring in those right people to work with them, you know, she would be a great one to connect with. So now everyone has heard of this next one, I think. Aphrodite, she is, in here you say the queen of the sea, but we think of her as the goddess around love, you know, the goddess of love. So why don't you share a little bit about Aphrodite with us?
Well, we think of Aphrodite as the goddess of romantic love.
Right.
But that's actually her son, Eros, the god of erotic love, of romantic love. Aphrodite is the goddess of all kinds of love.
Yes.
And she's also known as Aphrodite Pandemos, which is Aphrodite of all people.
Oh, I never heard that before.
Hmm. Yeah, because everyone can love, and everyone can be loved.
Right. Yes, I did know that about Aphrodite and Eros. I remember that from, I don't know, a book we were reading in one of my book groups that I'm a part of. And yes, that people do just associate her with romantic love, but it's not. She's not. She's the goddess to go to if you want to bring more love into your life.
Yes, and all kinds of love. In the story that I tell about her, one of the exercises at the end of it is to see how many kinds of love do you see in this story?
Right.
There's a bunch of different kinds of love. There's romantic love, but there is also the love of parents for their children.
Yes.
There is the love of a ruler for his people. There's the love of a sailor for the sea.
Yes.
There is the love of the main character for her goddess. So, you know, we think about love as a healing emotion, or love as an emotion that makes us stronger. But it's not just romantic love. It's all of the shades of love.
All of the shades of love. Yeah, and she would be a wonderful goddess to work with if you're having any kind of difficulty in your family, right?
Yeah.
Just because they're your family doesn't mean that. So if you want to have more harmony with your, say, siblings, parents, children, you know, she would be, Aphrodite would be good to go to for guidance and helping.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the other things I talk about in the Aphrodite section is trust, because one of the things that is hard in love is trust. I'm going to tell the story of my oldest daughter. You know, when she was dating her first boyfriend, what she wanted was to check his phone all the time, see if he'd been talking to any other girls. And I'm like, you know, if you have to check his phone 3 times a day, you are not trusting him, or he is not trustworthy.
Right.
If you love someone and trust someone, you don't check their phone.
No. Mm-mm. No, you're right. You don't. Right. It's like if you're already doing that, then you're already seeing the red flag, right? There's already the red flag.
Or, I think in that case, she was just finding it very difficult to trust.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that there was some problem. It was that she really could not put aside what her friends said about, oh, well, men are all cheaters, they're all cheaters, they're all cheaters.
So she took on that story.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a very teenage girl thing. But
of course.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Yeah. But, what I had to say as a mom was, that's not how adults have relationships.
Right. Right. No, it's not. It's not.
That's not a healthy adult relationship to be checking your partner's phone every 5 minutes.
No. And then you also talk about with Aphrodite having faith.
Yes. And that faith is not blind. Faith is an outgrowth of trust. I have faith in my partner, so I don't go check the phone because I know there's nothing on there that would bother me.
Right. Or you can you can continue that. Well, I also, even deeper, I have faith in myself that there is something there that I will be able to handle it and I'll be okay. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good. So if you're working on issues of trust and faith, then Aphrodite would also be great to connect with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. So next one is Cybele. Oh my God. I got that one completely wrong. Cybele.
No, it's that C sounding like a K again.
Okay. Cybele. So, and I had never heard of Cybele either. So this is probably the ones I haven't heard of or the ones I've really botched the pronunciation for. Okay. So Cybele. She is the goddess of death and rebirth.
Yes, and renewal. Right. And she is one of the most enigmatic and fascinating of the ancient goddesses. And part of that is because much of the secrets of her worship were not written down. They were intended to be secret. So we don't know exactly what the secret rites of Cybele were in a lot of cases. But death and renewal, change, transformation. Sometimes in our lives we hit a point where we need to make a big change, like a snake shedding our skin. You know, it's not a gradual transformation, it's a big break. To say, you know what, I'm going to move across the country. You know what, I'm going to get a divorce. You know what, I'm going to completely upend my life by making a major change of some kind. And that is one of the most frightening things I think that we ever face, right?
Yeah, I think so. Transformation is super scary after going through something, loss, and then having to, She would be really good to deal with if you're going through some kind of a major loss to connect with Cybele, I think, from what I was reading from in your book. Because it's very scary, right? It's super scary to like you said, like, I think it's time for me to, you know, get a divorce, or I think it's time for me to move to this place, quit my job and move to another place in the country, you know, another state. All those things are very scary. So she would be great to connect with when you need some strength in those, and some insight, I think, in those areas of your life.
Yeah.
Have you worked with Cybele?
No, I haven't. Mm-hmm. But a dear friend of mine has worked with her extensively. And this was really occasioned by the loss of her partner to cancer very young. And, you know, that's the sort of transforming experience in an awful way. No one ever wants to have this experience.
Yeah.
But to go through that and become a different person on the other side of it.
Yeah. In the book, I'm just looking at it now as I'm talking to you, a really good tip is with your meditations, if you're doing them alone, I mean, you could always do them with somebody else, but you can just, you have a whole, it all written out for us. So the best thing to do is, I think, is just record yourself reading the meditation and then listening to it after with your eyes closed.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah. If you're doing it by yourself. Yep.
Yeah. Because it's that way you can really like get comfortable, get grounded, set your intentions, and then you can just have your eyes closed and get into that space, so then you can hear the meditation. It's much easier to get into a meditation like that. I mean, that's what I found personally. So
these are short. These are, you know, 5 minutes or so.
Oh, yeah, they're short. Yeah, they're super short, right?
Mm-hmm.
So who have you worked with personally?
Isis is my main one. Aphrodite, a great deal. Atargatis really draws me at this point in my life. Tyche, I have a beautiful Tyche statuette on my desk for good fortune in writing.
Mm.
So I think those are probably the four that I'm most drawn to myself at this point. Athena, I was drawn to more some years ago, but I think the what I'm doing in my life has changed, and that's perfectly okay. That as you move through life, what you address and who helps you address it changes.
Yes. Yeah, sure. To where you are in your life, things change all the time. So you're going to be resonating with different ones at different periods of your life more,
Absolutely.
Depending on whatever's going on. So, Joe, I know this isn't your only book. You want to share with us a little bit about some of your other work?
Yeah. I have 27 books, other than Seven Goddesses are spirituality books. And the others are fiction books. My most recent book that just came out in March is a historical fantasy novel called A Blackened Mirror, which transposes the myth of Persephone and Hades into the gorgeous 15th century Renaissance Rome of the Borgias. So it's kind of a yummy book. And I also have a space opera series that's running, The Calpurnian Wars, Sounding Dark and War Lady.
Wow.
And my other spirituality books are about the crisis era that we are currently in and how that fits with the Etruscan idea of the saeculum, that society goes through a crisis about every 80 years, and that this is a natural part of the great wheel, that what we're going through is not unique or unexpected, that it's simply a season on this 80-year cycle.
Oh my God, so interesting, Joe. Thank you. You guys, check her out on goodreads.com. You can see all of her 27 books. That's amazing. Thank you, Joe, so much. Okay, everyone, thanks for listening to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. I'm wishing everyone a wonderful week filled with joy, abundance, and love. Peace.